Mr. Wazlikoff's sermon and his admission earlier in the week that he's a klutz. I know his in-laws are here, so I don't want to say too much beyond that, but he's like me. I've had many of those same experiences where you think you know how to do it, and it just doesn't come out right. So even though it's against my skinflint nature, I tend to hire people now to do a lot of those things that I used to do myself, and I used to do them better somehow. I always say, look, I think I could do this. I just wouldn't do it right. So I appreciated that. I appreciated it on the last day. He made a reference, and it may seem strange to some of you younger people, a reference to radio. And, you know, I've listened to radio since I was a little kid. I've worked in radio for over 50 years now. And my father told me back then that this was back in the early 50s when television came along, that, of course, with television now and people being able to see their favorite shows with their eyes, radio will die. And, you know, a few years from now, we won't have radio anymore. Well, fortunately for me and my job choice, that didn't happen. Now, I'll see puzzled looks on some faces here, some of the younger faces, when I talk about what radio used to be like. And some of you have been around since the 30s, 40s, whatever. Remember when radio was a series of programs, like television is today. You know, you'd have Jack Benny on for a half an hour and the Lone Ranger. That was my favorite. We'd play Lone Ranger, us kids. One kid would play Tonto. Since he knew the Lone Ranger better than anybody else, he'd call him by his first name. He'd call him Lone. This was in our neighborhood. Didn't catch on radio, but you had a series of radio programs, much like television is today. And as my father told me, radio will die. Fortunately, he was wrong. Because radio did something back in the early to mid-50s that changed its complexion into kind of what we're used to today. I'll put you younger people in a little more comfort zone here, where a radio station basically did the same thing all the time. In other words, if you played music, which most stations do, you played music all the time. If you played country music, I did raise my hand when he said is country music quality. And I've said this to several people in the feast that I get a lot of my inspiration from country music. Because country music is full of magnificent bad examples. It used to be, and it still is to some degree, although I differ from some of my traditionalist friends who I've worked together with for years. They say, boy, it's getting so dirty and raunchy now. Maybe it's a little more graphic when it's dirty and raunchy, but country music in the 40s and 50s was dirty and raunchy. Wasn't necessarily the good old days. If you remember such sweet, loving songs as Slipping Around. Seems I always have to slip around to be alone with you. What a fine thought. What a great bad example. Hank Williams and Your Cheating Heart. And on. My wife and I occasionally, when we travel, we'll find if we rent a car with Sirius XM in it, we'll turn to Willie's Place, which is a classic country station. And we are amazed at listening to these good old songs from back in the 50s and 60s and even 70s. How bad they were. And there are a lot of jokes about, you know, drinking. A little bit of drinking discussed in country music, not a good social drink. I had a cousin who was a social drinker. He drank all the time, just in case somebody showed up. And he would drink to relax. Sometimes he'd relax so much he couldn't move. But that's not something to rejoice in. That's not something necessarily to sing about, although country music is known for its frankness. And, of course, all the cheating songs. One of the greatest cheating song singers, drinking song singers, was Mo Bandy. He performed in Branson for a while, and I got to visit with Mo quite a bit. And up to a point, I don't want to get into his personal life and his dirty laundry, up to a point, he didn't live like that. He and his wife lived in Texas. They came up here on a vacation, decided to buy a theater. He performed here. He had children and grandchildren. And was really the type of person you'd want living next door to you. In fact, he bought my house. well, not the house I lived in, but I used to drive to Branson once in a while down Highway 13, and I was working there quite a bit, and I thought maybe I ought to buy a house out here. And there was a little house set up on a hill just north of Reed Spring, and it's very pretty. It's got a deck all the way around. It's not particularly fancy and has some acreage, and I thought, well, I'd like to, I probably couldn't afford it, but I'd like to buy that house if I ever decided to headquarter myself in Branson. Mo bought it. So he never invites me over, so I haven't been over to see it yet. But anyway, how did I get off on that? Oh, radio stations developed individual identities to where, generally speaking, you push a button and you have your favorite station there, and you're going to hear what you're going to hear 24 hours a day. So radio made a tremendous change. That's my point. A tremendous change in its formatting, in the way it was presenting itself. And some of you, again, younger people may not realize that radio, except for the pictures, used to be pretty much like television is today, a series of varying programs. And today, of course, basically you've got a station you like, type music you like, you push the button or turn it on, and there it is. It may be an all-talk station. So radio changed. And I'll use that example just because I did see some blank looks when I looked around the auditorium when Mr. Wasilkoff was talking about radio and the way it used to be. Families gathered around their radio to listen to Jack Benny on Sunday night or whatever, or Gene Autry or whatever. So it changed. We, if we are going to survive, need to change. We can't just be doing the same old thing the way we've always done it. And that goes for newcomers, people who are new to the faith. That goes for us old guys, too. I was baptized over 50 years ago. And I still realize I'll get up in the morning and reevaluate the day I'd just gone through. Sometimes evaluate my plans for the day, getting even with somebody or something like that. It's not quite that evident, but I realize as I pray that I need to ask for forgiveness. I need to redirect my path. So we need to change. That's part of our job as Christians, a big part of our job, probably the main part of our job. God gives us the strength. He gives us His Spirit. We're the ones that need to throw the switch and decide, yep, we're going to do that. Or we're going to look at ourselves and find what we need to do. One thing we can't do if we're going to change, we can't just live in the past. We can't live in the past. That's sort of a refuge we go to, us older people particularly. I know I was visiting with Robert Hancock the other day, and he was talking about his wild youth. I said, well, I wasn't wild like that. I don't want to air his dirty laundry either, although he'd probably be glad to tell you some of his stories. I did the right thing. I went in the Army, learned to kill people and break things, and found myself in Korea. And I was telling him one story that, you know, about something that happened that he found rather exciting. I found it disappointing, and I was hurtful even to talk about it a little bit. But that reminded me of when I was young. I was 19 years old at the time. And so things look a little more glamorous when you look back at them from the past. It was something I survived, not that my life was in danger, but something that I survived and felt good about surviving. But sometimes we do look back at the past and the good old days. Exodus 16 and verse 3, this is nothing new. Exodus 16 and verse 3, and this is talking about the children of Israel. God was proposing through Moses that they go on this journey. And they were on that journey. And things weren't going the way they wanted. And in verse 3 of Exodus 16, and the children of Israel said unto them, would to God that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt. We wouldn't be out here. I'm thirsty. I'm hungry. When we sat by the flesh pots and did eat bread to the full. You know, we had all we wanted to eat. And you brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. We're all going to die. That was probably their pledge, I don't know, or their rallying point. Israel longed to go back to the good old days. They didn't realize how good they had it compared to that, and how bad the good old days were. Numbers 11 and verse 5, basically saying the same thing. Numbers 11, verse 5. Remembering the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers. Oh, I like a nice fresh cucumber right out of the garden. The melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. All that spicy Italian, well, it was probably Egyptian food. All that spicy food that tasted so good, we remember that. And again, we sometimes take refuge in thinking about the good old days. Now, I'll admit there are a lot of problems we have in the world today that we didn't have 50 years ago, maybe 60 years ago, 40 years ago, whatever. But still, were the good old days really that good? We've always had problems. And sometimes, in some ways, things are better today than they were back then. It almost sounds heretical to say that. Talk to Roy Holiday sometime, one of our leading ministers, and ask him to tell you about his experiences in the rural South on a baptizing tour when he was threatened by a sheriff, told to get out of town because he had been caught counseling a black man for baptism. And they apparently had met in a park, as they would do, and here's this white guy, a couple of them, talking to this black man. You just didn't do that in the South. I grew up in New York. I remember my first trip to Florida when I was, I think, 12, 13 years old. And seeing the doctor's office in Fort Pierce, Florida, there was only one, but it had two separate entrances, the white entrance, the colored entrance. The water fountains that were labeled like that. The beaches, which were separate. I don't think that was right. I don't think those were the good old days. We didn't, you know, I went to high school, and about a third of the school was black. And we had a hard time relating because blacks were treated so differently, even in the North, back then. Were those really the good old days? Maybe, well, you're like me. You're lily white. Maybe it just didn't seem like that serious a problem. To some people, it was. And again, you could talk to Roy Holiday about his experiences in the South. My wife and I were having breakfast this morning with some friends and got to talking about the good old days when you could smoke in public. You could smoke in a restaurant. You could smoke in a bar. And I was one of the, believe it or not, one of the advocates for let it stay that way. Because I was supervising some people at a job that required a lot more attention than sometimes they wanted to give it. And I would say, when you're on duty, you are to focus on what you're doing and spend time at doing it. And it made it more difficult when they had to get up, go outside, and smoke. So I was for, let them smoke in their space. They're going to smoke anyway. Of course, I didn't think about secondhand smoke. But so I was an advocate of let them. No, I'm not. I never minded being around smoke. I was brought up with people who smoked. My parents were excellent, good, bad examples. I'm trying to think how to put this. You couldn't look at them and say, they smoke, it's going to kill them. They smoked one cigarette a day, basically. They would have supper, they'd go to the living room, they'd have their cigarette, that was it. It was hard to condemn that type of smoking. Of course, when they had friends over to play cards, they'd smoke all night. Or when we go on trips sometimes, they'd smoke a little more than they did at home. But most people get hooked on it, and it ruins their health. So I never minded being around it, but I do now. Now that it's not done in restaurants, if I go to a restaurant somewhere where they still allow smoking, or I'm in a private space where one or two people are smoking, oh, I notice it a lot, and I don't like it. But those were the good old days. You could smell smoke in the air, you know, to the point of choking. I remember when I was in the Army, we were in one of these personnel carriers. It was actually a truck with a top on it. And we were sitting back there, and guys were smoking, and somebody said, anybody here who considers themselves a non-smoker is lying to himself. Whether he's lit up a cigarette or just smoking everybody else's through. Those were the good old days. You know, we don't always think of the good old days in perspective. Now, again, things have happened, are happening, will happen, and I will happen. Things will get horrible. I think I expressed that in a couple sermons in the past month or so. Things will get awful beyond what we can imagine or what's ever happened before. So I'm not soft-selling that. But the fact is, we don't always see those awful things that happened as we look back. We overlook that and think those were the good old days. Look at Luke 9. Luke 9 and verse 62, which will show us where we should be at. Luke 9, 62, Jesus said unto him, no man, having put his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of God. We can't live in the past. We can't live, you know, like we used to. We can't focus on the past. It's easy to do. Again, I can talk to the older people here. They'll understand. When you look at what life was like 50 years ago, it's hard to think of it as being particularly bad because you were 50 years younger back then. You weren't like Ralph Giddens, who's, you know, ate too many donuts and ended up with bypass surgery. Now, and many of us, I'm not picking on him because I can make the same analogy in various ways, but we need to be looking forward. We're a futuristic church. We're a futuristic people. That was the meaning of the feast, wasn't it? We heard that over and over and over. We heard it during the Day of Atonement. We heard it during trumpets, that we're looking forward to a kingdom that God is going to set up on this earth that is going to be wonderful beyond what we can imagine. So are we forward looking? Are we looking forward? That's what the feast was all about. I will quote Martha Stewart. It's not in your Bible. Don't look for First Martha, whatever. She said one time, when you're through changing, you're through. And this is from a woman who is now in her 70s. So she's probably done some changing, and she's still active. You see our television once in a while. But she said, when you're through changing, you're through. As one person said one time, there is no Christian retirement. You never give up being a Christian. Some people have. I know back in the 80s when Mr. Armstrong died, I forgot what year it was, but they thought, well, Mr. Armstrong's dead, the work is over, time to retire. And look at our numbers. There aren't as many people here as there were back then. So we need to be forward-looking. But on the other hand, at the other extreme, we can't get locked into pursuing contemporary standards. Change for change's sake. Proverbs 24. You know, there are some people who just feel the need to change for change's sake. Proverbs 24, beginning in verse 21, ending in verse 21. My son, fear you the Lord, the King. Meddle not with them that are given to change. People who wake up in a whole new world every day. As my old boss used to say, they're flaky as a bowl of Post Toasties. You never know where they're coming from. You never know what they believe. You never know what their latest trend is. And I'm not saying it's wrong to dress, you know, in, I guess, fashionable current clothing, et cetera, drive a new car if you can, or a fairly new car, keep your house up. But some people change for the sake of change. I worked with a guy for years who was kind of, by my standards, given to change. In a way, that was a good thing, because if we went and suggested something that was better way of doing it, he was always willing to listen, because he was willing to change when he needed change. But sometimes he would change for the sake of change. And I can think of a few examples, but I won't get into them. But various things that he did just to, because he was tired of doing things the same old way. And usually they were superficial. One point it was a change of color. in our radio studios. He decided all the walls that people looked at should be orange. Well, they're doing that now on the Today Show. That's their thing, the Orange Room. And various things like that. That didn't hurt anybody. That was fine, but got to change. You know, some people move every year or so. I've been in the same house for, I'm thinking it's 42 years. 1973, yeah, that's 42 years ago, I think. And I've mentioned before, I've become my dad. My dad lived in the same house from 1942, and although he was in a nursing home, still had the house when he died just a few years ago. He worked at the same job mainly for not his entire career, but most of his career. Started when he was a teenager with his company, grew with the company, and lived there almost until he retired, worked there. He and my mother were married over 70 years. I used to look at my dad and say, boring. Oh, look at me. I've been in the same house for 42 years. I worked at the same job. I'm beyond retirement age now. Worked at one job for 28 years. In a job where the average tenure for my job was 6 months. I've been married to the same woman for 54 years. I guess I'm boring, but I like it. I'm not given to change, and we shouldn't be given to change. Yes, there's a time to change, but sometimes in this society, we're encouraged to change even when we don't need to. To prevent that, we need to focus not on what's hot and current and cool. We need to focus on the everlasting things, standards that don't change. This was mentioned in the first sermon. I don't remember if he put it that way, but a lot of the things he was talking about were things that don't change. We need to focus on the everlasting. And one everlasting example that was definitely brought out in the sermon, the first sermon in Hebrews 13. Yeah, I'm going to quote a scripture that he used. I think sometimes we worry, we didn't compare notes before services or this past couple of weeks. And rarely do we, and I've never seen any time that's been a problem. And it certainly isn't today, but sometimes we cross the same paths. We bring out some of the same scriptures. And Hebrews 13 and verse 8, Jesus Christ, he didn't quote this, he quoted another one in Hebrews, but Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. We quoted the one about Christ being our high priest and a perfect example. But Jesus Christ doesn't change. He's the same today as he was yesterday. He will be the same on into eternity. I hope you take a lot of comfort in that. Malachi 3 and verse 7. Make that verse 6. Malachi 3, 6. He says, "For I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, you sons of Jacob are not consumed." God doesn't change. He made a promise. He has a plan. And because of that plan, because he's sticking to the plan, we're the beneficiaries of that. We can count on. Wouldn't it be awful? You know, if somebody called you tomorrow morning, maybe I'd call you because maybe, you know, I get stuff on the internet that only the ministers get. And I called you and said, hey, there's been a change in God's plan. You know, he promised us this, that, and the other thing. Well, that's not going to happen. God is not God. Now, our understanding of his plan would be fine. You know, it does change occasionally, but his plan does not change. I had a reoccurring, Mr. Schultz would call a Don Pierwitz moment, where I worry about things that I don't need to worry about, that it's the end of the Day of Atonement. And I fasted for 23 hours and 55 minutes. Almost a full 24 hours. And I've gone to Kentucky Fried Chicken to break my fast. And fasting is something we need to do. We should do more than just once a year. But it ain't easy. And in my, if you want to call it dream, nightmare, I run into a deacon in the church. And he says, oh, by the way, the Day of Atonement, we miscalculated. It's not yesterday, it's today. It's the upcoming day. Oh, no. That hasn't happened. You know, our understanding may change, but God is not going to change his plan. Psalm 100 and verse 5. Psalm 100 and verse 5. Psalm 100, verse 5, for the Lord is good. His mercy is for the next 100 years. His mercy is everlasting. His truth endureth to all generations. God isn't going to change the game plan. God is not going to change his character. He's not going to change his promises or his outlook. His truth is to all generations. He's not going to say that's not cool because this is 2015. You know, we've had a little change on this or that or the other thing. No, he's not. Again, our understanding changes as we grow sometimes, but the basics are not going to change. You know, there was that rumor 5 years ago that United was going to change doctrine. I don't know where it came from, and I have seen absolutely no evidence of it. But the reason I made the decision I made was two things. One, we are continuing to do a work. Two, doctrine hasn't changed. There's been no move to change doctrine. It would be about impossible for doctrine to change the way that would have to take place. So God's love for us, God's plan is not going to change. Psalm 139 and verse 24. And we see there be any wicked in me, lead me in the way everlasting. Show me how to do things right, things that are not going to change. So we need to focus on the everlasting, the trunk of the tree. You know, as Mr. Prince said one time about his late mother, one thing you never said to her, two words, new truth. You know, we don't really look for new truth. So, again, it's a way everlasting. 1 John 2 and verse 15. 1 John 2, 15. Love not the world, neither the things of the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. We can't fall in love with this world. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, you know, those things we like to see. The pride of life is not of the Father, but it's of the world. So sometimes the world comes in conflict with God's plan and what God wants us to do. The world passes away. The lust thereof, he that does the will of God will abide forever. Again, we need to focus on the everlasting, and we need to look forward. We need to look forward. Look at Philippians 3 and verse 13. Philippians 3 and verse 13. Brethren, I count myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do. Forgetting those things which are behind, the good old days, reaching forth unto those things which are before, the things we are celebrating and just completed, hopefully we haven't completed, but we have just intensely celebrated over the past month, looking at those things which are before, I press forward for the prize, for the high calling of God in Jesus Christ. We need to be a forward-looking church. And that's what we celebrated just recently. We celebrated a look forward. As we look toward the next few months, you know, this is a, as far as holy days go, it's a long dry spell. You know, our next get-together for a holy day or a holy occasion, other than the weekly Sabbath, will be Passover next year. Passover and the days of unleavened bread. And we look forward to several months of winter, several months without holy days, although we do have the weekly Sabbath to look forward to each and every week. As we look forward to the next few months, the next year, as we look forward to the rest of our lives, we cannot be focused on the past. We can learn from the past, but we can't focus on it. Based on what we learned at the feast, we must be committed to change. Are you committed to change? Or you think you're good enough? Or you think, well, yeah, I'm a Christian, I've retired from Christianity. We can't change for the sake of change, but change should be focused on God's everlasting values and goals. The time to take that next step toward God's kingdom.